Justice Ginsburg, with whom Justice Stevens, Justice Souter, and Justice Breyer joined, dissenting. In Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania versus Casey, the court declared that liberty finds no refuge in a jurisprudence of doubt. There was, the court said, an imperative need to dispel doubt as to the meaning and reach of the court's 7-2 judgment, rendered nearly two decades earlier in Roe versus Wade. Responsive to that need, the court endeavored to provide secure guidance to state and federal courts as well as legislatures throughout the Union by defining the rights of the woman and the legitimate authority of the state respecting the termination of pregnancies by abortion procedures. Taking care to speak plainly, the Casey court restated and reaffirmed Roe's essential holding. First, the court addressed the type of abortion regulation permissible prior to fetal viability. It recognized the right of the woman to choose to have an abortion before viability and to obtain it without undue interference from the state. Second, the court acknowledged the state's power to restrict abortions after fetal viability if the law contains exceptions for pregnancies which endanger the woman's life or health. Third, the court confirmed that the state has a legitimate interest from the outset of the pregnancy in protecting the health of the woman and the life of the fetus that may become a child. In reaffirming Roe, the Casey court described the centrality of the decision whether to bear a child to a woman's dignity and autonomy, her personhood and destiny, her conception of her place in society. Of signal importance here, the Casey court stated with unmistakable clarity that state regulation of access to abortion procedures even after viability must protect the health of the woman. 7 years ago, in Stenberg versus Carhart, the court invalidated a Nebraska statute criminalizing the performance of a medical procedure that, in the political arena, has been dubbed partial birth abortion. With fidelity to the Roe-Casey line of precedent, the court held the Nebraska statute unconstitutional in part because it lacked the requisite protection for the preservation of a woman's health. Today's decision is alarming. It refuses to take Casey and Stenberg seriously. It tolerates, indeed applauds, federal intervention to ban nationwide a procedure found necessary and proper in certain cases by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, ACOG. It blurs the line firmly drawn in Casey between pre-viability and post-viability abortions, and for the first time since Roe, the court blesses a prohibition with no exception safeguarding a woman's health. I dissent from the court's disposition. Retreating from prior rulings that abortion restrictions cannot be imposed absent an exception safeguarding a woman's health, the court upholds an act that surely would not survive under the close scrutiny that previously attended state-decreed limitations on a woman's reproductive choices. Part 1, Section A. As Casey comprehended, at stake in cases challenging abortion restrictions is a woman's control over her own destiny. There was a time not so long ago when women were regarded as the center of home and family life, with attendant special responsibilities that precluded full and independent legal status under the Constitution. Those views, this court made clear in Casey, are no longer consistent with our understanding of the family, the individual, or the Constitution. Women, it is now acknowledged, have the talent, capacity, and right to participate equally in the economic and social life of the nation. Their ability to realize their full potential, the court recognized, is intimately connected to their ability to control their reproductive lives. Thus, legal challenges to undue restrictions on abortion procedures do not seek to vindicate some generalized notion of privacy. Rather, they center on a woman's autonomy to determine her life's course and thus to enjoy equal citizenship stature. In keeping with this comprehension of the right to reproductive choice, the court has consistently required that laws regulating abortion at any stage of pregnancy and in all cases safeguard a woman's health. Our precedents hold that a state may not restrict access to abortions that are necessary in appropriate medical judgment for preservation of the life or health of the woman. Since the law requires a health exception in order to validate even a post-viability abortion regulation, it at a minimum requires the same in respect to pre-viability regulation. We have thus ruled that a state must avoid subjecting women to health risks, not only where the pregnancy itself creates danger, but also where state regulation forces women to resort to less safe methods of abortion. Our cases make clear that a risk to women's health is the same whether it happens to arise from regulating a particular method of abortion or from barring abortion entirely. Indeed, we have applied the rule that abortion regulation must safeguard a woman's health to the particular procedure at issue here, intact dilation and evacuation, D&E. In Stenberg, we expressly held that a statute banning intact D&E was unconstitutional, in part because it lacked a health exception. We noted that there existed a division of medical opinion about the relative safety of intact D&E, but we made it clear that as long as substantial medical authority supports the proposition that banning a particular abortion procedure could endanger women's health, a health exception is required. We explained the word necessary in Casey's phrase, necessary in appropriate medical judgment for the preservation of the life or health of the pregnant woman, cannot refer to an absolute necessity or to absolute proof. Medical treatments and procedures are often considered appropriate or inappropriate in light of estimated comparative health risks and health benefits in particular cases. Neither can that phrase require unanimity of medical opinion. Doctors often differ in their estimation of comparative health risks and appropriate treatment. And Casey's words, appropriate medical judgment, must embody the judicial need to tolerate responsible differences of medical opinion. Thus we reasoned, division in medical opinion at most means uncertainty, a factor that signals the presence of risk, not its absence. A statute that altogether forbids intact D&E consequently must contain a health exception. The lack of a health exception necessarily renders the statute unconstitutional. Section B. In 2003, a few years after our ruling in Stenberg, Congress passed the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act without an exception for women's health. The congressional findings on which the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act rests do not withstand inspection, as the lower courts have determined, and as this court is obliged to concede. Congress did not fully consider the evidence before arriving at its findings. None of the six physicians who testified before Congress had ever performed an intact D&E. Several did not provide abortion services at all, and one was not even an OBGYN. The oral testimony before Congress was not only unbalanced, but intentionally polemic. Congress arbitrarily relied upon the opinions of doctors who claimed to have no or very little recent and relevant experience with surgical abortions, and disregarded the views of doctors who had significant and relevant experience with those procedures. Many of the Act's recitations are incorrect. For example, Congress determined that no medical schools provide instruction on intact D&E, but in fact, numerous leading medical schools teach the procedure. Among the schools that now teach the intact variant are Columbia, Cornell, Yale, New York University, Northwestern, University of Pittsburgh, University of Pennsylvania, University of Rochester, and University of Chicago. More important, Congress claimed that there was a medical consensus that the ban procedure is never necessary. But the evidence very clearly demonstrated the opposite. There was no evident consensus in the record that Congress compiled. There was, however, a substantial body of medical opinion presented to Congress in opposition. If anything, the congressional record establishes that there was a consensus in favor of the banned procedure. The congressional record itself undermines Congress's finding that there is a medical consensus that intact D&E is never medically necessary and should be prohibited. Similarly, Congress found that there is no credible medical evidence that partial birth abortions are safe or are safer than other abortion procedures. But the congressional record includes letters from numerous individual physicians stating that pregnant women's health would be jeopardized under the Act, as well as statements from nine professional associations, including ACOG, the American Public Health Association, and the California Medical Association, attesting that intact D&E carries meaningful safety advantages over other methods. Congress, in its findings, chose to disregard the statements by ACOG and other medical organizations. No comparable medical groups supported the ban. In fact, all of the government's own witnesses disagreed with many of the specific congressional findings. Section C. In contrast to Congress, the district courts made findings after full trials at which all parties had the opportunity to present their best evidence. The courts had the benefit of much more extensive medical and scientific evidence concerning the safety and necessity of intact DNEs. During the district court trials, numerous extraordinarily accomplished and very experienced medical experts explained that in certain circumstances and for certain women, intact DNA is safer than alternative procedures and necessary to protect women's health. All of the doctors who actually perform intact DNAs concluded that, in their opinion and clinical judgment, intact DNAs remain the safest option for certain individual women under certain individual health circumstances and are significantly safer for these women than other abortion techniques and thus are medically necessary. Respondents presented evidence that intact DNA may be the safest method of abortion for reasons similar to those adduced in Stenberg. According to the expert testimony plaintiffs introduced, the safety advantages of intact DNA are marked for women with certain medical conditions, for example, uterine scarring, bleeding disorders, heart disease, or compromised immune systems. Further, plaintiffs' experts testified that intact DNA is significantly safer for women carrying certain pregnancy-related conditions, such as placenta previa and accreta, and for women carrying fetuses with certain abnormalities such as severe hydrocephalus. Intact DNA, plaintiffs' experts explained, provides safety benefits over DNE by dismemberment for several reasons. First, intact DNA minimizes the number of times a physician must insert instruments through the cervix and into the uterus, and thereby reduces the risk of trauma to and perforation of the cervix and uterus, the most serious complication associated with non-intact DNA. Second, removing the fetus intact instead of dismembering it in utero decreases the likelihood that fetal tissue will be retained in the uterus, a condition that can cause infection, hemorrhage, and infertility. Third, intact DNA diminishes the chances of exposing the patient's tissues to sharp, bony fragments sometimes resulting from dismemberment of the fetus. Fourth, intact DNA takes less operating time than DNA by dismemberment, and thus may reduce bleeding, risk of infection, and complications relating to anesthesia. Based on thoroughgoing review of the trial evidence and the congressional record, each of the district courts to consider the issue rejected Congress's findings as unreasonable and not supported by the evidence. The trial courts concluded, in contrast to Congress's findings, that significant medical authority supports the proposition that in some circumstances intact DNA is the safest procedure. The district court's findings merit this court's respect. Today's opinion supplies no reason to reject those findings. Nevertheless, despite the district court's appraisal of the weight of the evidence, in an undisguised conflict with Stenberg, the court asserts that the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act can survive when medical uncertainty persists. This assertion is bewildering. Not only does it defy the court's longstanding precedent affirming the necessity of a health exception with no carve-out for circumstances of medical uncertainty, it gives short shrift to the records before us, carefully canvassed by the district courts. Those records indicate that the majority of highly qualified experts on the subject believe intact DNA to be the safest, most appropriate procedure under certain circumstances. The court acknowledges some of this evidence, but insists that because some witnesses disagreed with the ACOG and other experts' assessment of risk, the act can stand. In this insistence, the court brushes under the rug the district court's well-supported findings that the physicians who testified that intact DNA is never necessary to preserve the health of a woman had slim authority for their opinions. They had no training for or personal experience with the intact DNA procedure, and many performed abortions only on rare occasions. Even indulging the assumption that the government witnesses were equally qualified to evaluate the relative risks of abortion procedures, their testimony could not erase the significant medical authority supporting the proposition that in some circumstances intact DNA would be the safest procedure.